Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan, and this is a Skype call out to the great state of Georgia. And I've got someone on the show this evening that I have been following for some time. I'm very happy to have him on. Seth Martin, how you doing?
Hey, man. Good to see you. Doing well.
Dude, I'm so happy that you came on the program. And so I want to open up with this is tell everyone a little bit about who you are. Where are you from, man? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Fort Sonia, Georgia. It's in Elbert County. They're about 40 minutes east of Athens. And I actually grew up, I guess, to get particular, I grew up in the Flatwoods area of Fort Sonia.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up on Baker's Ferry Road. And, you know, Elbert County is the granite capital of the world. Granite manufacturing capital of the world, and my folks had a little granite shed there in the left of our yard, and we had a pasture kind of to the right. Early on, we had some cows and stuff, and across the road, a bunch of hardwoods to go squirrel hunting in, you know.
Right on.
We moved when I was in high school. We moved to town. But I drove out there every time I go to the lake and stuff like that. I drive by there, and I did that right before I actually live up in Nashville now. Moved up here about a week and a half ago.
And, caught you at a heck of a time, did I?
Yeah, I moved up here about like a week and a half ago, and I'm actually in this little tool shed out behind our house where I've kind of. That's the spot to play my songs and hang out at, you know. But we moved to town, and so I hadn't been out to Baker's Ferry Road regularly. But man, I went out there right before I came up, and it's such a unique, special way to grow up. It kind of tore me up, you know, had me crying, driving away.
And, no kidding, no kidding, man.
For it, you know, got real lucky and had a real privileged upbringing to have such a relationship with nature and have the folks I did raise me and my brothers, you know, so thankful for that.
Yeah, man, I can relate. I'm from a small town called Kennedy, and I was just hanging out with a buddy of mine. He grew up in a community a couple over from mine, but it was cow pastures and fish ponds, and you know, we'd swear up and down if there had been a gas station in that town at that time, we would have done all our business with them. Because, I mean, we were just camping out for the summer and fishing. And, you know, we were cooking what we caught that day or whatever else we could do, you know.
That sounds fun, man. That sounds fun.
I mean, and that's what we were into. And so, like, man, I really relate to, I mean, we're here to talk about your Saturday morning cartoons and the vibe I get off of it is like that same vibe when I go back to those early teenage years of just being out with the boys.
Oh, thanks, man. I mean, that's it. Those are the Saturday morning cartoons to me, you know. It's like all those memories and all the memories that you got to make moving forward with whatever, you know, your Saturday morning cartoon might be. It sounds like for us it was hunting and fishing and playing ball and stuff like that. You know, I didn't learn. There wasn't no instruments around when I was growing up, not in any kind of negative way, but it was just not what we were into. You know, I didn't learn my first chord until we made that first Dish Boys record when I was like 24.
Wow. I wanted to ask you about that. So, I mean, I guess we kind of dug into it already, but what was life like for you growing up? It was just like, kind of what I'm describing is hanging out with the boys and working on the farm, or
we didn't have a farm. We had some hobby animals around and dogs and everything. But I mean, ball was my life growing up. I mean, it was like playing sports was it, man. I mean, just what we were into. My dad coached some ball, mm-hmm. for T. McFerrin, actually, this great coach. He was the coach of David Green and David Pollock, who went on to all that UGA success in the 2000s. And dad coached.
Get a little Go Bulldog going around here. Got you a national title.
I mean, if you want to get down to it, you know, those guys were all recruited by Jim Donlin, and then Mark Richt won all the championships. So I like to say, you know, don't discredit Jim Donlin, dog fans. He did more than you might think. But yeah, dad coached ball, and then got into Granite, and kind of left that behind. But was always super interested, and always coached all of our little league teams, and stuff like that. So I mean, we naturally, that was just what we did. I mean, there's this recreation park called McWilliams Park, about probably 10 miles from our house, that right before you kind of get to where it turns country in Elbert County. And we would be up there like all weekend, all day, like every season. I mean, we played everything. Basketball.
Man, yeah.
Like I played soccer even for a while just to do something.
You know? We didn't even have soccer in our area when we were growing up. And so like when we first were introduced to soccer, we just made fun of people. It's like, you know, also we didn't have golf either. And so we used to make fun of people for playing golf, and I'll never forget the first time the boys and I all went out and played golf, and it was like, we owe a whole lot of people an apology.
Right? It's hard. It's hard.
Yeah. And it's fun, too. It's a great way to spend a Saturday.
Yeah, when we moved to town, actually, we lived kind of near the golf course there. And I was never any good, but I mean, I had friends who were, so we'd ride around and hit balls and, like, you know, drink beer. And it's like, yeah, great way to pass the time. But so after moving to town, I went to, you know, I graduated high school, Elbert County. I guess covered some high school here, but the high school football was just it, man. That's like our whole that
work. Identity.
Identity, exactly. That was like the whole thing in school, and then and that, and kind of like going out into a field and making a fire and partying, and like going camping and going fishing and going hunting and playing ball. That was like my early life completely.
Cool, man. And so you said you wouldn't touch a musical instrument until you were 24.
Yeah.
So, like, what did life look like for you, Seth, when you were exiting high school? What did you think you were going to do? Like, were you still involved with sports or trade or what?
I went to Georgia Southern for school, and I worked for the football program there the whole time I was in school at Southern. I was in school at Southern for 3 years, and like coming out of high school, it was like, I'm going to work for the Georgia Southern football program, and I'm going to become a high school football coach. That was like my whole, that's like all I wanted. I think I even told my dad, like, I know everybody gets to college and changes their majors, but that ain't going to be me. I ain't going to do that. And then I started the job with the football program. That was going great. That always went great. I always loved that. And I was doing like filming the practices for the team use. Like I was like part of the video staff, and we would do like, all the games and cut up the film and just like an entry level gig there, you know. And I got like a little mini scholarship from school, and so that was always amazing. But I took my first class, round of classes, and I had to take anatomy. And I was a smart kid in school and in high school, but I never really studied. I could just go in and, like, take the test and make a B and be all right, like, kind of no matter what. And so when I got to college, we had that first test with anatomy, you know, doing physical education major to go on to be a high school football coach. And I made a 14 on that first anatomy test. And that was like one of three grades that we had in the class that year or something like that. So I was really kind of like, this ain't going to work.
Right.
So then I was kind of like, what do I get into? I'm not really sure. My parents would always be like, know, you love, you could argue with a wall. You argue with us about this minuscule stuff that doesn't even matter. You should be a lawyer. Like, I'll do political science. How about that? And I still just had really no idea. But then I realized that the school had a radio program, and that you could get an hour or 2 hours a week just by going in there and signing up and having your major as communication arts. So I swapped my major to communication arts and started doing that. I did that for a year there. And that was kind of my, like, I'd always been into music because, you know, my mom would have 97.1 The River, like the classic station coming out of Atlanta, playing like,
okay,
all the time in the car. And it was like, you know, guess that song, and we could all do it within seconds. I mean, we're all very into music and like listening to the radio. And like Allman Brothers, I was an Allman Brothers freak in like middle school through high school. And like my mom gave me like that REM CD with the moon on the cover.
Ooh,
like,
your mom did you a favor, bub.
Dude, right. I was talking with my roommate today about my mom, and I got to crying, man, because she taught first grade for 35 years at this school right across from Projects in Elberton. And we all went to school there too, and that was amazing. And just to get to see all that, because, you know, our friends who went to the little country school, you know, they were having any relationship with people other than themselves until they maybe got to high school. But, and man, my mom just taught, like, you know, folks are in the NFL now, how to read. And she's just so sweet. And so I got all my music trip was from my mom, and I had this work ethic majorly built in from my dad with sports and outdoors and like a kind of a stewardship with the land kind of thing. I mean, we, like, you know, I never killed anything unless we were going to eat it, or like, or even the concept. I early on, when I got the concept of like, if you have food on your plate, you should eat every bit of it, because if you don't, that's a disrespect to the plant that it came from or the animal that it came from. That got instilled, stuff like that got instilled in me early on that I still, you know, live by. And just so lucky for that upbringing. But the Statesboro, I'm like, you know, classics. I mean, Statesboro is like the party school in Georgia. It's like, if you can get out of your hometown and go anywhere, you can probably go there.
Yeah.
And so we just kind of party. I mean, looking back on it a little bit too much, you know, kind of neglected. And but I had the radio show thing going, and then I had a roommate move in with me. Channon Reams is his name, and his grandma had run this ferry in Alaska for her whole kind of retirement years, and him and his brothers had all gone up there and worked like every summer since they were young.
I was wondering how that got hooked up for you. I was wondering how you went to Alaska.
Got so like lucky on that, and Channon was so gracious, because, like, I mean, when he got back, just to tell us about it and to get us all the job. I mean, it wasn't like, I never did an interview. We never did any of that. We just like got our plane tickets up there. They met us at the airport, and it started happening. But so, like, initially it was going to be like two or three of us, like, don't tell anybody about this Alaska trip, man. You know, we're trying to like take a small crew up there. And then I think we went up there with 13 people, you know, and we all got there, and it was like, you can either work at the campground or the ferry. And the ferry, I didn't even know about the campground until we got there. And it was all, the ferries, like, had been overstaffed by two people. So there was two people who were going to have to work at the campground. And me and my buddy Nugget McBride threw our hands up immediately, saying that we would work at the campground. And it turned out to be the best thing ever, because we worked for this old guy named Wally. And he's just the sweetest dude from around Biloxi, Mississippi. And his grandson runs the campground now, Jared. And we got to meet Wally and learn from him, and he was a big part of is a big part of my life forever, and all of us boys who work at the campground felt that way.
What would you say that you learned the most from Wally?
That it is morning, boys. It is morning. Like Wally would, he'd drive up in the 1982 Chevy Scottsdale that was like faded yellow, come up and you could hear all that happen because it was on gravel road and we were living in these little like kind of tool shed bunks and you could hear everything and it's so quiet out there. And he'd pull up and get out of the truck and walk up and say, "It is morning, boys. It is morning." He asked him, "Is like, why do you say it is morning? And Wally, why don't you say good morning?" He's like, "Maybe you're not having a good morning. Maybe it ain't a good morning for you. I don't know before we even get started working." So, like, I don't know, little stuff like that. And I met Sean Kedzie there, who's become like a just dear lifelong friend. I lived and worked with him when I did this recent winter up there.
Yeah.
So many formative friends. And like, that's when I first started listening to Neil. Like, I listened to Neil with Sean for the first time, and I read the book Shaky. I don't know if you've read that. It's like a biography that's like information on one page and then quotes from Neil on the other.
And oh, wow.
Because we didn't have very many. I brought four or five books with me. Everybody brought four or five books with them, and we would just pass them around. And, you know, after a little while, living with no power and no running water, you read all the books two or three times. So I read Shaky three times that summer. And that's like a 600-page book, mm-hmm. you know. And so the second and third time, I would listen to the records and read the book while it was happening because it was all told in, like, chronological order.
Mm-hmm.
But that was like, damn, this songs thing, man. I got to, like, figure something out on this songs thing. I always been into music, but always thought I was like a fan or like a friend of the band who would help you do load-in or something. You know what I mean?
I feel that, dude. I mean, that's kind of like my partition here with this, right?
But that's such an important role, though. Or like I look back on, or I'm getting there with this, that part of the story coming in a second, I guess. I don't want to spoil it. But so I go back from that trip to Alaska. Or maybe that would have been my second year. My first year, I don't know that I did any of that investigation with music. It was just, damn, we're in Alaska. Let's go hiking and fishing and camping and, like, poured it into that. And the second time I went up, I went on my own as, like, a spur-of-the-moment thing. Like, just did it. Like, and so when I came back from that second trip after having done that research on the Neil thing and realized I wanted to fool with music like as a thing in my life, but I still didn't even know anybody with a guitar, you know. I came back from that trip, started living in Athens. I was crashing on like my brother's couch for a couple weeks, and I was like, how do I get into this thing? So I knew there was this thing called Southern Shelter. This guy named Sloan Simpson, like a total hero of a guy out of Athens, Georgia, recorded shows forever. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
he had a website called Southern Shelter with 1,000-something shows on it, probably. So I saw that was happening, and I was like, I'll start. And I'd been real into the Grateful Dead in college, and I was like, damn, I could start recording shows as a way to maybe meet some people in the music thing. Not even thinking that I would... maybe long distance, somewhere way in the back of my mind, thinking like, yeah, I'll be in a band one day. But still the load in, load out, take some pictures guy, you know. And then recording shows was another game of it. And I just was really into that, too.
Mm-hmm.
The whole, like, the Dead thing was huge for me. I had a little booklet in Alaska that I think I kept, like, 300 Dead shows in. So it's like 8/27/72 is my favorite show. I probably... yeah, that's my shit. But so I started recording bands around Athens, and I would just go up and put the recorder in my pocket, and I called the website Live from the Pocket, which, looking back on it, kind of a hacky kind of way to do that. But, like, some of the shows sounded great, You know, I had this recording. Mm-hmm. I had this recording of Chris Robinson Brotherhood from the theater that sounded really good. You know, and that's like a big room. I just kind of got in the sweet spot and got quiet, didn't say anything, and hopefully nobody talked to me. And so I was doing that, and I went to catch Jessica Lee Mayfield with T. Hardy Morris opening when it was like the audition tapes era. That was like the record that was out at the time. And I think Thayer and Pistol backed him on that show. Great show. I went by myself. It was the Auburn weekend, actually. So it was like kind of like I'd turned the corner from like, I'm going to get wasted and go watch the game to like, I'm going to go and record this show and try to, you know, be that my interest had started changing in that way around that time.
Yeah. And just for those listening, like when Georgia plays Auburn, that's kind of a big deal. That's kind of the between the hedges, if you will.
I mean, I've seen the game on the plains as well.
You know, mm-hmm.
I'm that into it. We were like, we had season tickets growing up, like section 324 at Sanford Stadium since I was a kid.
That's what's up, bub.
And like, so that was kind of looking back on it. At the time, that wasn't a thing I thought about. You know, I didn't realize it was like a moment of change, but looking back, it's like, huh, that's kind of around tide turning time, you know. I'm still into football and watching the Dogs and everything, but just not in the way I was before. I was like an obsessive fan. Like it would like ruin me until we won again. It's like a high school.
same, dude. I grew up in Bryant-Denny. I'm the same way about the Crimson Tide, and I'm that same way now. It's I still go to the games. It still means something, but it, like you said, it used to be everything to where it would ruin, you know, a weekend or a week for me. But now it's not so much.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just ball.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, like what am I really gaining or losing anyway?
Yeah, I was gonna say it's just ball, but damn, don't we love it?
Yeah, yes we do. Yes, we do.
And but so I'm leaving the Hardy show. The Hardy show gets done, and I'm leaving, and I push the door open, and it pushes back, and kind of do that thing two or three times, and this redheaded guy walks past me, and I recognize him, but I'm like, is that Garrett Hibbs? That's not Garrett. It looks so much like him. Doesn't he have a brother? Yeah, he does. So I say, hey, man, aren't you Garrett Hibbs, his brother? Yeah, I am. And we went back outside and started talking. And I rode home with them that night, and I started living with them in this cabin that they had. Rob and JP DeBrule from a band called Reverend DeBrule. By that time, I think they were just calling it Reverend. And they just took me under their wing. I mean, I started recording their shows and practices and helping them with load in and load out. And we just, you know, they really took care of me. And I started working at the mall in Athens, actually, like at Macy's around that time. Like, so at the time, I still had that long, long, long hair, you know, and the beard and everything. So it was real fun to look back on.
Hey, you was a wild man.
Okay. I'd be like, ma'am, you know, somebody would tell me, you know, about buying pants for their grandson or something, and you know, he's probably just gonna wear them once or whatever. It's for this thing. Just, they'd be picking out this real expensive pair of pants. You know, me being who I am, I'd kind of steer them towards this like cheap pair of pants that like I would buy. And at some point, I think one of the managers was like, you know, I get what you're doing, but like, this is a business here. We're trying to like sell things to the customer. Like, you don't want to like waste all that like $30 on your grants. Just get this like $15 pair of pants or whatever. But so I realized like, all right, man, you know, this, there's that stage. There was a lodge or campground. And called Gwen's Lodge. It was built in like 1952, same setup as it was back then. Just, it still is now. Beautiful. Right across from the Kenai River, and which is like glacier fed and looks, it looks like turquoise. It's crazy. And so there's a stage behind that lodge. And I was like, damn, we could just work at the lodge instead of the campground. And they kind of were more interested in the lodge thing than the campground anyway, because, I mean, who wants to live with no power and no running water unless you're borderline crazy? You know?
Stop talking about you and I like that.
Who we are. But I truly loved the campground so much. It's like, you showed me a lot about like what I need and maybe don't need. Like if my power goes out because the weather's bad, I got it.
Yeah.
But I maybe didn't know that stuff or feel that way kind of before then, because college, you know, or around that time period, it kind of dulled a little bit of those senses that I had as a kid, to be honest with you, you know.
Well, not only that, I mean, you were probably chasing females and had other things on your mind at that time as well.
Right. I mean, Statesboro has a certain type of allure to it, you know, for certain people. But so the guys in Reverend who took me under their wing and I was living with them, they're still playing shows in Athens. They played a theater, Nowhere Bar, places like that. And they all were down to go. And so they were like, how are we going to get there? Let's tour. They wanted to drive across the country. Hell yeah, man. And so we did it. And they didn't play a full schedule. It was like maybe 6 or 7 shows, but it was kind of more about like camping and seeing places we'd never seen. Like we stayed like 3 days outside of San Francisco in like the Marin area, the Redwood camp.
Nice.
We stayed like 3 or 4 days
Didn't know they make them that big, did you?
Yeah, God almighty, man. I ain't never seen nothing like that. I mean, I got some film pictures of it and stuff that I still will run across now, and I'm like, just so lucky to have ever... Like, I'd never been anywhere up until that trip. I had never been anywhere other than kind of like Myrtle Beach, Pigeon Forge, one trip to Arkansas to see my Uncle Jimmy, one trip to like Daytona to see the Dogs play in like a bowl game. And like, that was as much traveling as I had ever done. You know, we did travel league, middle school baseball or something.
Yeah.
So, getting to see like clouds in the Southwest, you know, getting to see the shadow of a cloud 10 miles away or something in the Southwest on one of those lookouts by the highway, like just woo through my brain.
Oh, dude. Yeah, no kidding, dude. I'll never forget when I was in Viña del Mar down in Chile in South America. And I was like, what is a country boy like me doing in a place like this?
Down there?
It was a mission trip. It was through. I wasn't even in the college. Like my roommate at the time just kind of threw me into the trip, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, let's go.
Nice.
I mean, this probably never happened again. And the whole time I was down there, I was like, just thrown by it. But when we went to Viña del Mar, I mean, you had these Spanish castles sitting on these cliff sides of the Pacific Ocean. And here I am, a country boy from the South, in the heart of the Bible Belt. I was like, there ain't no way I'd ever see that in any other life, you know?
Dude, that is amazing. That is amazing.
It was unreal. And, I mean, still to this day, like, some opportunities that presents itself, it's like, you know, maybe it's right place, right time, or, you know, maybe it was just a season. I couldn't call it, but just being ready and available to go. And I think that's... You know, that might be a lot of people. It's like you have an opportunity to present itself, but you don't have the balls or gumption, and you just say no. Yeah, that's where you lose it.
Having the guts to really make that kind of knee jerk thing is something that like always want to keep being. If I ever lose the ability to do that, I kind of need to start getting my routine better or something like that, because like. All these things I'm talking about that seem so drastic, from taking me from Bakersfield Road to Alaska to who I am now or whatever, they're all such drastic changes, but they were really just kind of small decisions that like I just had to believe in myself.
Yeah.
And like, there's been times with me where that's been really not there, you know, for one reason or another. And then there's times where it's really strong. And I think the times when it was really strong and is really strong is just following my personal intuition that I've kind of had since I was a kid and that we all have, you know. So, yeah, I mean, just going with your personal feeling about things and trusting yourself and trusting, like, you know, the universe or God or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what's led to anything that's been good in any of our lives, really.
And I don't want to fast forward too much, but we found each other on the wonderful world of Instagram. And you were kind enough, right before you went off to Alaska, and matter of fact, I thought it was dope. You were in Alaska for almost the entirety of COVID.
I was there for 8 months. Yeah.
Yeah.
From
But you sent me one of your records with one of your working bands at that time, and I still listen to that record. But like that is when you and I started like really connected on social media, and I started paying attention. So like walk it up to making that record and that band, like, because I really do enjoy that music.
And that's right where we're getting is like, so Rob Hibbs from Reverend goes to Alaska with us. They're doing that thing. It's right around the time that band's starting to end. And he shows me my first chord in a mining tent in Alaska. And I had, the whole time through college, I'd been writing poetry, you know, and just writing. I didn't even think of them as lyrics. They're just poems. And I was how that got started.
I could tell you how, because you and I write the same kind of funky way, buddy. it just works.
Yeah. I mean, I just had to have some outlet. Like, sports was the outlet so hard that it was like it just kind of just bubbled off the surface. I really can't put a finger on it, but I'm glad it did. So, actually, you know, I was a vocabulary champion in fifth grade of Elbert County.
Let's not get to bragging, but I won a spelling bee one time, okay?
I just brought that up because you think there's no connection, and then you think a little deeper, and you're like, oh, yeah, this has something to do with that, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, Rob teaches me my first chord, and then that summer was all shows from Reverend and other Alaska bands to play out there. And then summer, we came back again, and it was Dish Boys. The first ever Dish Boys show was in Alaska at that lodge, at the little stage behind the lodge.
That's fun.
And the name Georgia Dish Boys came because me, Rob, and Garrett were working as dishwashers at that lodge. And we would do maintenance and housekeeping and, like, working the little store and, like, stuff like that, too. But we were mainly dishwashers. And this girl from Virginia would see us walking across the big old property that they had, like, back to the employee bunks or something, and say, hey, Georgia Dish Boys. And then we started getting referred to as that. And then we did that summer. Super fun. Played those shows. Played the first show. The first show was, like, three covers and three originals, I think. It was, like, a small set right before of an Alaska band. I can't remember the name of it even. I don't know why. But so we got back to Athens, and I started working at Heirloom Cafe there, a place where, like, you know, a ton of people who played in bands worked, and we met a drummer named Eric Zock. That comes a little later, actually. But I was working at Heirloom, and we were calling the band Georgia Dish Boys in our minds, and we made this first album. Kind of started, I guess maybe there was a song or two written from that in that last summer in Alaska, because there's some songs about, like, there was this fire. I can't remember the name of the fire, but it got real close to where it was the Funny River fire, and it got real close to where we were living at, to the point that we had to evacuate and go across the river like down the road in town. And there's songs Garrett Hibbs wrote about that I wrote about that. And the first Dish Boys thing that we made has like a little quilt on it. It's like a little CD. And that had three songs from Garrett, three songs from Rob, and three songs from me. And we just gave that out for free to anybody who would take it in Athens, you know. We had all been seeing shows like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do in that town, especially back when it was like Caledonia Lounge was still going. I mean, you could see like a great touring band from any town in the country in that room. You still can in Athens. It's still that way. But that's just the room we were hitting hard. And we'd see like, you know, Hardy and the Hard Knocks and like Kenosha Kid and Thayer Serrano and like that kind of crew of bands.
Mm-hmm.
And just trying to meet people and still was like, how do you book a show? You know, I don't even know how to do that. Rob and Garrett and them did from their old band, but it was different kind of music. You know, Dish Boys didn't really sound like Reverend at that time. And a buddy who worked at the restaurant at Heirloom got us to open for his band, and that was our first show in town. And I think at that time I was living on Ruth Street in Athens, and we played a house show there. And then I moved to kind of the other side of town, and we had a house show a month for like 6 months. You know, it was like, I still don't know how to book shows. I didn't get the concept that you just send them the email and like they're going to respond to you because they want to have shows in the room too. I don't know. I had no clue about any music business stuff or even just like how to book a show in the dive bar at that time. You know, strictly trying to learn how to write songs with the people in my band.
Yeah, I still don't, dude. I book festivals now and I still don't know how it works.
But like,
I got a lot of people that help me.
Right? Yeah.
Hold my hand.
Hopefully we can get really good at whatever we're doing and really still not know how it works. You know,
that's room. I mean, just before that we got together, I was just at the local restaurant out on the patio. We were talking about this interview, and how did all this get hooked up? And I was like, man, to be honest with you, I really couldn't tell you how it started. You know, I was, we connected on social media because we really liked music, and then I liked what he was doing and he liked what I was doing, and we just decided that we would get together this evening.
Yeah, man. I mean, I just, I think I found your stuff through just looking at shows in Alabama, you know,
yeah,
and started seeing like the Porch Talk thing popping up. And then I listened to a couple episodes and was like, damn, I feel, you know, this is like, sounds like somebody I grew up with, you know?
Yeah. That's my trademark, man. It's
kind of like all the people that I've gravitated towards over the years in one way or another. Just, I don't know, cut from the same cloth type concept, but I get along with a lot of people who are very different from me too, because that's part of the trip as well. It's like that openness that you, I don't know, it's a big part of our life from the time I was a little kid.
That's it.
And like, I don't know, I live in the city now, and most of my friends here grew up here, but like, we're this kind of the same people too, you know? I mean, hell, everybody is, you know.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, so trying to finish this Dish Boys story, I'm trying to get you to this. Was the record Suitcase of Life that I sent you, or was it Sending Out My Love?
Suitcase of Life.
Yeah. So, like, the record after the first one was like no drums, acoustic guitars and electric guitars and vocals. Second one, drummer I had known from Statesboro, who was in a funk band called the Vocals. named Scott Underwood, who is a banger. I mean, he sounds like punk Levon Helm type vibes is what he did on our recording. But his other thing was like totally Coltrane-y, you know, which I fucking love John Coltrane. The Impressions album is like, I put that on when I get in the shower like every day. You know, that's like, that's my staff. So he played drums with us, and I knew a guy named Shane Nelson, who's kind of a classic funny man around Statesboro. I was like, damn, some Statesboro people, cool. And so we'd go over there to his house and practice in their little spare room, and we started putting together this record called Get Gone, and it turned out that I had all the songs for it. Like, nobody else is really writing songs, and all the songs were kind of in this, like, loud and cranked up. I had just bought an amp for the first time. I had just bought an electric guitar for the first time. Like, I bought my electric guitar from our manager in Alaska and brought it back with me on the plane.
Well, Seth, at this time in your writing, and I know the Dish Boys is well established, but has your poetry, have you already started infusing your music with that? Or was it so much you kind of felt what the band was trying to sound like and be like, I can totally give my poetry to this?
I think it was kind of both, you know.
Okay.
And it kind of still is that way. They're kind of interchangeable. I've been writing some new poems lately that aren't something that you would use for songs, but like all my poems at that time and all the poems I wrote in college were kind of written in, I guess they call it verse, you know, where they like shit rhymes. I don't know what you call it, but like all the poems I'm writing now that I wrote out at Catfish Heaven, that property I lived at recently. I mean, that, all those poems are just, what do they call it? Like prose, you know, they don't have any form. It's just like, they read just like a story.
Mm-hmm.
But those don't have to do with songs. But at this time, I was only writing poems that were kind of also could easily be viewed as weird. Now that I look back at it, it's like, you know, that Statesboro stuff was like, yeah, I was kind of probably trying to build those into what would 5 or 8 years later become songs or whatever, because I've used like all those poems for songs, you know. Like I think the first one I ever did was called Ancient Miles, and that's on the first Dish Boys thing, and maybe one called Mr. Chapman that I wrote with a buddy in Statesboro named Jordan Totten. And so it was always like I would at that time I was writing so much, like I just got the toe dipped in the water and got pulled into the creativity thing, you know. That's really the trip, is like,
What would you say really sent you off? Was it like location and just the visuals that you were having, or was it just the stories that you had collected over the years of these people?
I think, you know, a mixture of the two. I mean, I got to be honest, man, like the big change for me was like a point in college where took LSD for the first time. I mean, holy shit, I got to be dead on it. All game changer. Holy shit. The next morning after that, it was like truly set anew, like in a cosmic, spiritual kind of way. And it like took me from that. That's probably what jumped me a bunch of hurdles that maybe other people.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
hadn't had to jump.
Or it most certainly will.
Yeah, it just got me. Like, a lot of the openness points. It gave me those ideas. You know, that stuff doesn't. LSD is not going to change your life. It gives you the tools to look at life a little differently and make those changes yourself. You know,
mm-hmm. I would totally say that.
So, I'd have to say I would be amiss if I didn't say that was part of it. But the Alaska trip happening exactly around that time, like the first Alaska trip was probably 4 months after that. Mm-hmm. First. And so, seeing all that land, and also like coming from where I came from and being like, damn, this isn't very different than North Georgia. This is really similar to North Georgia. So I think that's kind of where that early well of creativity came from, is like that relationship with nature, relationship with my like personal views starting to change, and like creating some sort of like, I don't know, like a personal responsibility to the fact that we've been like gifted this vessel of to have creativity with.
Mm-hmm.
And to share with each other and express, and that got to ringing so true that I had to answer the call, you know. So then that travel concept built in really hard with how we wanted to do the Dish Boys. You know, it was like, mm-hmm. damn, that first tour drive across the country with Reverend was like the model for how we wound up doing the Dish Boys. Cause it was like, you know, at least, 2 or 3 runs out of town a month. I mean, we played like 130 shows a year, like 3 years in a row.
You know? Getting it.
And just out of like a Mercury Mariner from 2008, you know, I mean, there was one time when me and Tyler Key, you know, great friend of mine, played steel in the Dish Boys from 9 through the end.
Mm-hmm.
And me and him were on the road in, I guess, you know, a Mercury Mariner with 2-wheel drive, and 10 foot of snow hit us in like kind of around the Donner Pass, it turned out. We looked up and saw like one of these signs that said the Donner Pass, and it's like, I bet they didn't realize there was snow in California either, too.
Mm-hmm.
So just getting in, just having journeys like that was the whole Dish Boys. It's like still felt like I hadn't seen the U.S. yet. And it was like I'd seen people doing regional runs and the concept of touring and stuff from bigger bands. And then you start seeing like, I know Hardy and them were doing kind of national runs at that time, Future Birds.
Mm-hmm. So,
Lee Baines and the Glory Fires, the Dexateens. You could just, like, I started looking at, like, all these schedules from these bands that I loved and being like, well, where did they play when they first started out? And mm-hmm. if those places still existed, I found their email contact, and that's where we tried to play at, you mm-hmm. know, and just use their maps, like, you know, and the concept too, like Dexateens had a concept of like at least once a month hit a like 3 different markets with a run, or, you know, I feel funny using that word, but that's what it is. But so it'd be like you play Athens, Nashville, Indianapolis, or play like Nashville, Indianapolis, Chicago. And I just started applying that concept to like the whole country, kind of, or at least like if we could drive. If we can make the drive back be 8 hours or less, I was always down to go.
Mm-hmm.
And there's times where it would just be me. I'd just be doing solo shows. Like whoever could make it, me and like the drummer, me and Rob and Gary, just me and Gary, just me and Tyler. Just at that time, and still, I mean, this is like.
Well, to break your train of thought on that, but like to be able to book it and, you know, just whoever can make it, did you feel like you were ever what a way to put it that whatever they were booking that night, it wasn't what you were going to be bringing?
No, because I tried to just be upfront about, like, you know, this run's a solo run, or this run's going to be, I mean, there'd be times like, damn, this lineup kind of fell apart and it's going to be a duo, and you just roll with it. I mean, have the four-piece band play after you or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. There was times, though, with booking, and all bands do this, but it'd be like, we can play jazz, you know, we can play some jazz.
We'll figure it out.
We need this run from we need this gig between like Flagstaff and LA. You know, so like spot in Tucson. I think we know how to play jazz for a couple songs, Rob.
Yeah. Hey, we figured it out.
So like, I mean, there's times, and that's kind of as hard as I ever, you know, stretched it or anything. But like, you have to do that as like a young band on the road.
Yeah,
I mean, so around Nine Song Movie was when we were touring that hard. Like me and Tyler, did like a, what's the number, like a 33 or so show tour, for Nine Song Movie that took us like from Athens to Chicago and back, and from Athens to above, like upstate New York and back, and then from Athens to Seattle and back, but using like the Southwest to get there, and like up through California and back through like Colorado and Kansas. And I think the last show on that run was in Nashville, actually, at Betty's. Yeah, at Betty's.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that was the like, oh damn, we just booked a national tour three times over. Let's do it some more, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And two, during that time period, I was writing a lot of songs because, you know, you just got all this inspiration happening, you know. And we weren't practicing. We practiced a lot, or rehearsed or whatever, you know, a lot for Nine Song Movie. Because, like, Eric was, we were all just kind of learning how to play our instruments for the most part. Like, particularly me. I mean, God, the jargon I would use for the Dish Boys is borderline not understandable, you know. You know, we use like the press shape on that like second one, and then we're gonna like push down to like this, you know, the one on the top, kind of, but right near that dot. I swear to God, I was like telling people how to, I was showing people my songs that way with like no possible verbiage. Yeah. But after a while, Rob and them taught me like, oh yeah, that's called A, that's called seven, or like whatever.
Yeah,
I don't think I ever really, I still don't feel like I've like learned the guitar. Hopefully you never feel like you're over with it, you know. Like, I know more now than I knew then, but hopefully I don't think you can. It's like infinite thing, you know.
Dude, I was just having a conversation today, just because I was down on myself, and I'm sure you've been here with another guitar player, and I was, you know what, I just feel like I either want to walk away from it or just break it, because like I have been in a rut for so long, because I'm playing the same old song and dance, and I've been through two or three or four different song and dances, and there is no new inspiration.
Yeah.
And immediately after that conversation, like, it sparked on me. I was like, well, there's a million different ways we could go, dude. You just take a look.
Damn right. Yeah, it just takes, like, for me, when I get in those times where I'm just playing riff, like, I'll grab my guitar, pick it up, and I just, that's kind of the same, we're trying to write the same song. Like, I don't know what gets you out of that funk, or I can't, you know, like, I don't know what has worked for me, even. It just ends up working itself out. You know, you ain't going to see any of us put the guitar away for our lifetime because of that fact. Like, it just, it just works itself out the more you fool with it. I don't know.
Well, dude, let's move on to Saturday morning breakfast. Give me a good helping of this album and how it came to be. Because, buddy, woo-wee. And not just quoting you in one of your songs that might be one of my favorites off that record.
Thanks so much.
I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. I mean, I I really love it too, and it's because of the hangs that happened during the session and who was involved with it. Just all a bunch of old friends and folks who I've viewed as personal heroes, like since I've, you know, was in my early 20s. And you know, Justin Collins produced it, and I met him at Caledonia Lounge in like 2016. They played like, you know, one of those day parties that goes with Athens. Like, I think Hardy and them were on that bill too. It's probably why they were down there. And I went up and shook his hand after the show and said, "Man, great set. Love all your stuff." Bought a CD from him. And we just kept in contact over the years. Like, I think a year or two later, we came up and played the five spot with him. And have just played, like, probably we played the Cobra with him up here. Two or three more shows, and just had always kept in touch and became friends. And we booked a tour with our buddy Jack, who he recorded the album and mixed it, actually. We booked a tour with him that was like 48 shows. It was going to start in May of 2020. And so, obviously, that didn't happen. And we started seeing the news for COVID and stuff in like February, I think, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, will this tour happen? Maybe we can push it. And then, you know, a little bad after that. Maybe we can push it. Nah, ain't no pushing it. That, I think everybody was thinking that for a while. I was like, yeah, this ain't going away. And so it was like, damn, well, let's get through this whole immediate thing and get our shots and get right with, or let the whole thing kind of run its course. And then when we can get together, let's make a record. Because, you know, the Dish Boys thing had stopped happening. And before that, too, I had all these songs. I wrote all these songs in November of 2020. And so that was like right before the fall, before going up for this, that winter time in Alaska. And so we said, like, you know, let's make this record. And, me and Rob started hashing out songs when I got back from Alaska, and, just playing them on acoustic guitars, you know, out at Catfish Heaven, just like, playing one time. Not really even trying to like over learn them, because like, we kind of did that with the Dish Boys, and it's like just looking to do it a little different way, and just hanging as friends, you know, just fun. And so I sent Justin the demos, and he liked them, and we knew the whole time, or he had started saying the whole time that he wanted to get kind of that same band that I actually saw him play with at Caledonia, which is like this Australian tour version of Justin and the Cosmics that had Kyle Walsh on drums, the usual drummer, and then Vaughn Lamb from Hardy's band. And me and Vaughn, over the course of years, had become like really close. One of the groomsmen. You know, he was a personal hero of mine who became a close friend. And so that was the rhythm section. That's the rhythm section on the record. It's like the Aussie Cosmics, we all fucking call them. And Rob Hibbs, you know, the Dish Boys, came up and played electric rhythm guitar. And Justin overdubbed keys on it.
Wonderful work, dude. And I know you're going through the names right now, but dude, my God, have I enjoyed it, dude. I have since you originally sent that SoundCloud link, dude, I have been through it like five times over or better. Like, I really enjoy it.
That means a lot to me, man. Cause you get it, you know, like you get where that's coming from. Like,
yeah,
the references in there, like. You already referenced Woohoo Talking Blues. Like, I bet you know exactly what a covered dish is from the time. Like, yeah, that's one of your vocabulary words, probably, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and so, I mean, like, everything, like, even Saturday morning cartoons or late Saturday nights or, I mean, man, so many songs in that record, like, just a little phrase out of that record is like, man, I just feel like me and Seth grew up together. You know what I mean?
Dude, thank you so much. I mean, like, that just, you know, tickles me because you're kind of the first person outside of the immediate crew to hear it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I sent it to the flagpole and out of Athens, that single's coming out tomorrow. But other than that, and, like, our immediate friend group, you know, which I see you as a friend, you know, not just, like, the dude who does the podcast already. But, like, the, you know, you're the only media person who's got it right now.
Yeah.
And, I mean, So what I was getting at there was Justin he wasn't sold on every song having keys on it. And I was kind of pushing, like, we got to get the keys on this record, baby. It's going to vibe. And that's how I talk.
Yeah, I do too.
And, like, so he was like, all right, we got to find some cool tones. I'm down to do it if we can find the right tones. So he brought over this keyboard that he got for Christmas well, and we just sat there, you know. I kind of, we were talking about this the other night. It's like, you kind of produce the keys, really. Like, he'd just be going through the different tones, and we'd be like, yes, no, yes, no. We'd find the right tone, and then we'd play for a while and be like, yes, this works. Or maybe Jack would have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there were times where we would follow ideas all the way to the end and they wouldn't work. And we'd be like, want to go outside for a second? And we'd come back and, like, first thing we tried on the record, you know. But that was only the keys. Nothing else is dubbed on the record. There's no other instruments dubbed on the record. That was all live in the room.
Well, dude, so very well done. And I cannot wait for the people to hear it.
Appreciate that so much, man. I mean, like I said, we recorded it. Jack Evan Johnson recorded it in his unfinished basement at his house. And, you know, he's had a label out of Nashville for the last 5 or 6 years called Devil's Tower Records. And they put out that John Prine tribute, Kiss My Ass Goodbye, that Dish Boys was on, and, like, Hardy was on it, and Justin, Chris Crofton. And so, He's deep part of the family, man. I mean, him and Justin, I really feel connected to on a whole nother level, you know. And my roommate right now, Chelsea Lovett, she sang on the record too. She sings on Spin, Spin, Spin. And Scott, Justin's brother, who plays guitar in the Cosmics, he played slide on. And Jack plays electric guitar on the last song, and that's everybody who's on it. And when we had the roughs, I knew it was strong because all them were so stoked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for me, I don't know what a good recording sounds like. I know how to play my guitar in my songs, you know what I mean? But, like, that ain't really my game. I just mean, like, the quality, like, they're like, room sounds good, drums sound fucking, like, all these things that, like, you know, I just kind of have the songs. And that's where I'm at with it right now. I mean, less of trying to be, like, on that session, you know, I wasn't trying to be, like, a band leader or anything. Maybe the way Dish Boys, we were just in their room playing songs, just didn't, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, Seth, I have got 3 questions to walk this one out the door. And by the way, I would love to have you on again.
Yeah, I'll love to talk to you anytime.
Because I know I haven't covered everything, but I wanted to get everyone ready for some Saturday morning cartoons. So I understand that. Question 1, where can they find Saturday morning cartoons tomorrow? Because there is a part of it dropping tomorrow.
Yep, first single comes out tomorrow, and the video comes out tomorrow, and you can find that on YouTube and Bandcamp. And there's going to be the Flagpole magazine is going to have it on their feature premiere. And it'll be on my link tree on my Instagram. You can just click that link tree link and all those little links will pop up and you can click it and it'll take you right to it. And
send me all those links and I will tag them in this episode description and go on with the pre-link or the pre-order.
The pre-order starts tomorrow too. We're doing CDs and a great artist named Jessie LeMay out of Atlanta. She lived in Athens for a while too. Just amazing. Does a lot of jewelry and it's kind of every medium. Does clay, does painting, does, I mean, she's like a true artist. And so easy to work with. And like I sent this little mock-up that probably looked like a two-year-old drawed it. And he just threw it through the roof. The cover is gorgeous, beautiful to me.
I've really enjoyed the cover art of what I've seen so far. Question two, if the listeners want to connect with you on the socials and figure out what you got going on, where can they go?
It's my name on there is __ Seth Martin, but I'm pretty sure if you just type in Seth Martin, it'll come up, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, just give me a holler on there. I don't, I'm pretty loose on there and I think it's fun. Cause like, you know, I didn't even have a MySpace, you know, so like, I didn't, cause you know, I don't know. I was like living out in Bakersfield Road by then. I didn't get a Facebook till we moved to town, you know, like when I was going to college. And still, I mean, I think, you know, you can, there's ways to make it fun and funny and like to use it as an art form too, you know? So it's like one of those malleable trips that like, it's just part of the thing. I mean, it's like, all the, it's the medium, it's the newspaper, you know?
Absolutely.
But there's ways to make it fun. Cause there's times where you're like, I hate this shit, you know, but like, me and you wouldn't have met without it. And like me and so many
people
that I've met in real life and who, I mean, me and you are going to meet one of these days and have a beer, no doubt.
We're going to have a ball.
It's just a connection thing, you know, like you can connect with people on it. And I think that's an overall positive.
And last question is, what was your favorite part of this interview?
Woo. I don't know, man. Just talking with you in general, like hearing you talk about y'all going out and fishing and camping and hearing you talk about loving ball in the same way that I do. And like, and just getting to like tell these stories too. Cause like, obviously.
Oh, we got some stories out tonight, did we?
I mean, there's so much of it. Cause my life has just been such a drastic change over the years. And like, but I'm still that same kid, man. I still like I all of my creativity comes from kind of who I was when I was about 12 or 13, to be honest with you, you know. Mm-hmm. There's this patch of woods to the left. If you're looking at the house on Baker's Ferry, to the left of the house, and it separated us and the other property, maybe about 300 yards of just woods. And I would go in there and play like constantly to my heart's content and like play involved over the years and then, you know, just playing and shit. So like, you know, later it'd be like, that's where we get shot guns at a lot. You know, and just, but who I was kind of as a kid has been such a big influence on who I am and my creativity now. And like, it is like,
hang in there.
Are you good?
Yeah, we're good. I was about to bust.
Oh, you good? You good? That's pretty damn funny. I thought that's what was going on.
Oh my god, dude! I was about to tear apart. Let me fucking finish.
That, man, you know you can't take a piss on the phone. We can't take a piss, man.
Oh, we're brothers now. God damn. I was freaking the fuck out.
You're good. You're good. That is hilarious, man. Fuck yeah.
That's a hell of a close.
I mean, talking about so the whole trip. The whole trip we've kind of been talking about is got a lot, is like sincerity.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's like all the early, any press I've ever got, that's always one of the things they gravitate towards. That, you know, that's just me being myself. And that's what you were, that's all you were doing there. You ain't going to catch any flack off me for somebody having to take a piss. Like, it's a natural thing. And, you know, if something happens, then it has to have been a natural thing because nature wouldn't allow it.
Yeah, dude. Now I am good to extend it. Like I was sincerely, I thought I was gonna piss myself.
You good, man?
I was like, God. No.
There's one thing that I missed in like kind of that get gone area that I just thought of, like when we were playing, we made this little CD, gave it out, and it was like acoustic. And then first time we played live in Athens, it was like amps on 10, guitars on 10, earplugs music, you know, just banged out punk. Like we're getting off on the Dextines and like Lee Baines and them's like louder.
Thank you. That's a good place to be.
Dude, I still listen to Hardwire Healing like fucking once a month, probably. That shit is Sweet Dog. I've said for a long time that my two favorite drummers were Sweet Dog and Kyle Walsh. And Kyle Walsh is the drummer on Saturday Morning Cartoons. How lucky.
There you go. How lucky can one man get, baby?
I mean, truly, like, in that session, you know, like I mentioned before, like, Vaughn and Kyle hadn't seen each other since that Australia tour. That's the last time they saw each other, was that tour. So they just kind of picked up right where they left off. And that whole energy of their jokes still being, like, Australian dialect, you know, like mate and shit, kind of bled into the session a little bit. But just the energy of like, damn, we all ain't seen each other in a while. This COVID shit, man, let's rock. Let's fucking rock. And
that's where we're at now. And I love that energy.
Dude, yeah, I mean, I've kind of hit like the best time period. Like, I feel better than ever in so many ways right now, and it's because of the attention I got to kind of pay the small things during COVID, and like, you know, my personal wellness, my mental health, like my daily routine, like all my breath, like,
yeah,
I meditate every day for at least like 30 minutes. What the hell, you know,
dude, I can't tell you just how good, like, And that, it sucks to say because it was bad for so many people, right? But just how good, like, a pandemic or whatever was good for me, just for all the personal things that I learned that really, like you said, it helped me personally. And even, like, with this podcast or any other venture that I'm doing, it's like, it was a blessing in disguise in a way.
Yeah, there are only blessings, man. That's the trip, you know? Now that I think of it more, it's like there really are only blessings. Because, like, I don't know. I just, more you see it all start playing out, you're like, It's everything is perfect. And then you think like, well, you know, damn, hurricane or something like that. But like I said before, if nature is going to allow it to happen, then it is natural. Like nothing that has ever happened, atomic fucking bomb, worst thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
Holocaust, all that shit is somehow part of natural rhythm of the world doing like a fire burn on a piece of land. Or I don't, now I'm starting to get where I don't really know what I'm talking about, but like that interconnection permeates everything, you know. But yeah, I mean, the energy from the session that was so good because we call him Rat Boy, Kyle, the drummer. They got there the night before we did, and they did all the drum sounds and checked everything. Because usually when you get to a session, then the first fucking 4 or 5 hours just kind of standing around, you know. Mm. Unless you have already dialed everything in before you get there, you're just kind of standing around. And they had everything dialed in. We just walked in, got our amps right, and started playing. So the whole session for that bass tracking was 4 hours.
Wow.
You know, like, and
knock
I
out
that until we got to talking about it the other night, me, Jack and Justin, that like, it was only 4 hours. Like we were done, so quick because there's a lot of first takes on there. There's like, but also there's one song that we did like maybe 7 of, just cause, not that any of them were bad, just because you get to like the end of the song and something happens. It'd be like this Lost and Found, that song we did a lot of work on.
I really love that one too, by the way.
That's Justin's favorite. And like
right now I'm floating between 4 favorites, and that's one of the 4.
Damn, man. That's appreciate you saying that. And
I'm sure the more time I spend with it, like this is kind of like, are you familiar with Ryan Saab?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Like him and the Dead Mall.
He is a badass dude and super, yeah, super nice.
You know, whenever I'm sitting down with his material, the first time I listen through it, the second time I listen through it, like something else strikes me. And that is the way like your work has always struck me, Seth, is like, oh, I really like that the first time. But then I go back again, it's like, oh, that's really good. You know, like I guess it depends on the moment.
Heater off, sorry.
No, you're good, bub. I already went and pissed.
My phone's about to die, so if I don't plug it in, then I'm gonna be in bad shape.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I appreciate you saying that, man, because like that really is where it's at for me. It's like I remember a quote or something somebody said to me early on. It's like I have to listen to your songs like 3 or 4 times to even catch a lyric in the early days.
Mm.
I think they kind of meant that as like a negligent thing, but that's the way I kind of always had wanted it. You know, like anything that I've ever really loved and found interesting and that became a part of my life, like I didn't get it the first time or even the first couple times. Like the first time I saw, what's that David Lynch movie? Not Blue Velvet, but Mulholland Drive, man. The first time I saw the first time I saw that movie, I had no idea what it was about. Didn't even think there was a plot. It was like, that was a waste of my time, and I rented it from a video store on VHS. Like, this is, what the hell? That's DVD. And but then we had it for 5 or 6 days. By the time we went to return it in, I was raving about it to everyone I could find about how it was the best movie I'd seen so far. You know? So, like, little shit like that, that's kind of, like, all my friends' art is the same way. And, but I feel like if you know that going into it, it prepares you to have the experience of growth with the art. You know, like you're like a lot of times now I can pretty much pick every lyric because that's just where my brain's focused at. You know, when I hear a song, I'm like the story and the lyric and like how those things work with the melody, and like I'm more focused on that thing. But there was a long time where it'd be like, you know, I didn't pick up a single lyric in that song first time I heard it. But that's never made me, just because of the taste I have had. Like, I, like, you know, like we're talking about Lee Baines, man. Like, ton of syllables put into his verses. You know, like he's like, I've told him before, like he does the verse with a lot of words in it, and pulls it off in a crazy way that leaves you kind of flabbergasted. So like when I his work at first, there'd be times where I wasn't able to pull the whole thing because it happened so fast. But then you listen again, like a second time and a third time, and all these little nubs you start to pull, and like a Lee Baines song, you're like, this is about like a Congress bill. You know, holy shit.
Damn. So
once you then learn that, like once you've gotten to the end of that, you know, rainbow of the song, so to speak, I feel like it's worth so much more to you than if you would have just really liked it within the first 30 seconds. Not saying I don't like a good pop song, or I don't want all my songs to be approachable, or that there's not songs I like that I didn't get the first time, but like it's never turned me off for something to be need a little attention paid to it. You know?
Well, not only that, I mean, I think we're all a little sucker for a good hook line, you know, a line that really draws you in. But I think you really nailed the head on the hammer with the way that you define a Lee Baines song. With you got a whole lot saying in the lyrics, but you really bring it together.
Dude, he like, there was a show at Caledonia Lounge with, it was Hardy Morris opening, playing all the Drowning on a Mountaintop songs, just solo electric. I think maybe Vaughn got up there and sang like background on the song with him or something. And then 5'8 played. You know who 5'8 is?
I do not, tell me.
Banging ass punk with amazing lyrics, like kind of in the same way as Lee, with a lot of speed, a lot of information, but like also very literary. And a guy named Mike Manatone, he's got a band called the Bad Ends right now with the drummer from REM that's fucking sick. They just put a record. And I think they played last night with Driving and Crying or something like that. But so they were in the middle. And for who we were, the audience at that show was essentially like Dish Boys before we became a band, or maybe right around the time we became a band, and then like four or five other people who would go on to be in bands. Like all the kids from the dudes from the Pink Stones were there, but they hadn't started that band yet. Like that's kind of how that scene in Athens was, maybe around like 2017 or 2016 or something, you know? And so Hardy plays, 5'8 plays, and we're like, how the fuck can they top this? You know, I've heard, like, I had heard Company Man from Lee and knew it was banging, and was like, damn, I mean, they're the out-of-town band. Maybe they were supposed to play in the middle. This must be going to be good. And holy shit, like, all of us had our mouths on the floor for like a fucking month after that. I would... You could send me out on speaking tours talking about the greatness of that writer and that band, man. Just, you know. And such a good example for young songwriters like me, or young people who, like, see themselves in that trip of, like, yeah, I'm from the South, but, like, I ain't no, like, racist dumbass. You know, like, I can hold my own with any conversation in any room in the country. And so that kind of like them, Truckers, Hardy, Deck Teams,
REM. I'm trying to think of bands like particularly just from the South.
I think you named off plenty. I would add in like a Taylor Hollinsworth. But you know, like Dexateens and Lee Baines and the Glory Fires. Drive-By Truckers.
Oh yeah. Homecoming is like, good God Almighty, the best party in the ever, man.
Yeah. Holy.
And they send like, I think they donated like, what was it, like $33,000 or like something like that from their run to Nucci Space. So like, that band is like, you know, heroes. Heroes. And finding Patterson's work was huge for me. You know, like, that really was like a, oh shit, we can do this, man. Like, he's one of us. Like, that exists, you know. Just such a confidence builder for a young artist to see somebody like themselves doing the thing, and not even that it's successful, you know, like, mm-hmm. just fucking out there putting work out, you know, because like, crew of bands that we all came up with in Athens, you know, like Little Gold and Pink Stones and us and Tyler Key and the Strangers and Jonathan Coody and, you know, a handful more that I'm just not thinking of off the top of my head. Palace Doctor, all bands that like, you know, just doing this shit to throw some guitars on, drink a beer and like, express ourselves and like be part of a friend group, you know, that's kind of the whole thing. And that's how I feel now in Nashville too. That's how, like, that really is how it is up here. It feels
we didn't even get into that, but buddy, we have got to get into that at another time, man. Yeah. We've had a ball and a biscuit. The video is lagging, the audio seems to be good, but let's bring this to a close. Let me get you back on the show again soon, okay?
Dude, would love to talk to you anytime, and even just you just give me a holler on the phone. You got my phone number now, so I mean, just give me a shout, man. I just really enjoy talking to you, and who you are and how you're doing your thing is.
Thank you, man.
It's a cool thing to kind of look across the table and see somebody who kind of grew up the same way you did trying to do art, you know?
Right on, man.
Dang.
Well, let's put a pin in that Kun pushing right here. Let's wrap it up. Seth, thank you so much. And here's to Saturday morning cartoons, my friend.
Thank you so much, Alan. And Porch Talk is the shit, baby.
Let's go.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.